Welcome back to the Clear Voice podcast, the podcast that talks to accomplished women about how they've found their voices and are using them for change. With me, your host, Florence Bavananden. It's 2021. We made it. Can you believe it? I can't quite, but I'm very, very happy to be here. And thank you for listening to another episode of the Clear Voice podcast. Don't forget, you can find us on Instagram at Clear Voice Official and email any questions to hello@clearvoiceofficial.com. This week, I spoke to the Completion Coach. Wendy helps people find their magic through method and is passionate about helping people see their dreams through to completion. We discussed the power of journaling, how to treat your inner critic right, because let's not forget, they're a person too, tips on overcoming shame, and how to cultivate a personal brand. So, let's get into it. Welcome, Wendy. It's so nice to have you.
Thank you. It's exciting to be here.
So you are a coach, and would you also call yourself a mentor?
Yeah, I think it's mindset mentor, but then coach as well. So life coach in general, but very specifically on completing stories.
And tell me a bit more about that.
So the way that the brain even works is anything that's incomplete stays at the very front of our minds. That's why people on their deathbeds can bring to mind so easily what they didn't do as a regret. And anything that we've done, we file very quickly and put to the back of the brain and it goes off. So it's a way of working through the stories that are unresolved that need completing to make sure you can do what you need to do.
Totally get that. Even now I'm like, wow, okay, yeah, that makes so much sense about the things that I'm thinking about and the things that I'm not thinking about.
Yeah.
So how did you get into coaching?
I went through my own life crisis, I would call it, at around 32. I started to design and work on making a journal. And when I put that journal on sale, it sort of led me into coaching quite naturally. And then qualifications, getting my own coach and all the rest of it. But yeah, it started with a lack of confidence and a lack of direction and a realization that I wasn't quite happy with the way that I was living.
So for you, that's really interesting. So the journal came first. And what was it about journaling that made you want to create your own?
Because every single journal on the market that was around then, and we're going back 7-8 years, were to check in on, but they didn't get you anywhere. So they never took you on a journey. You were doing the same thing. Whereas I created one that kept in check what I needed to do to keep my mindset in check. But the point of it was to take me somewhere by the end of the 3 months, I'd actually have achieved something that I was after.
Yeah. You know, it's much more in the kind of mindset now. I feel like everyone's journaling. Most people are doing affirmations. I personally have discovered it in the last couple of years. But 7-8 years ago, was it as big a thing as it is now?
I think it was. If it's like anything, when you're aware of it, you see it everywhere. And when you're not aware of it, it feels like a really new thing. I was a stationary addict anyway, so I was quite often within those aisles, and it was just something that came up. So guided journaling certainly was something I got into first. Freestyle journaling came many years later.
What do you think the difference is between writing something down just to yourself versus talking it out with someone?
A lot more truth. We edit ourselves massively to make sure that somebody will understand us, or in the hope that it will be something that we think is realistic, or to sound a certain way, to present ourselves a certain way. When we're writing down to ourselves, for ourselves, the truth tends to come out.
Wow, and that often is so powerful.
Yeah, it's where most people realize they've been telling themselves a certain story that might not be true, or they've been avoiding something or didn't realize what they were feeling because they haven't ever processed that feeling, let alone said it out loud.
It's interesting. I was talking with Fiona Grayson literally last episode, and she was talking about how she has to write something down in order to articulate it verbally. It's a really big part of her process that she writes it down first. And it's that seems to chime with what you're saying as well.
Yeah, most definitely. For anything I'm going to go and speak into life, I will generally write to life before I can speak it.
Wow. And did that naturally come to you, or was it something that you had to really get into and kind of work out?
Yeah, it's been a practice. Initially there was so much resistance because these things were bottled up. To even start writing them down, there was still shame around some of it. There was still doubt. There was still the who do you think you are. But yeah, with practice it's just become more of a you need to do this because it helps you.
I heard someone on, I think, the Guilty Feminist podcast talk about how her mind was a hurricane until she writes it all down, and then it just comes out as neat lines.
Yeah,
I really love that.
Where we can get into overthinking, because the same thought is rattling around, much like the completion, it will hang around. When we've got things down, it feels in order. When that feels like it's in order, we can take out a lot of the thought processes of overthinking.
Totally. And so if someone wants to get into journaling and they're like, oh, this sounds good, sounds like it might help me, but then they're like, oh, I don't really know where to start, where do you think the best place is to start?
I still think guided, because it's a check-in and it gives you structure, but also the check-ins of them should be to see how you're feeling, and there should be prompts to get the mindset the way that you want it to be optimally. And then I use freestyle journaling and free writing weekly, maybe, as a bigger check-in. It's a bit more bougie for my time at the weekends rather than on a Monday morning when I might not have space for it.
So free writing, is it just literally like stream of consciousness? Do you set a timer?
I don't tend to set a timer, but what I do tend to do is always ask myself a question. So I use it for different things. If we ask ourselves even, what am I really resisting about this? If there's something going on, and write, eventually we'll find the root of the resistance. I don't just put my pen down and see what comes out. Even if I'm like, what do I want this time next year? And start writing within that, there will start to be the truth. And for other things, it's always, if I'm about to start a project or want to make a change, I always ask myself, what would it take for this to happen? And write, and again, it will show me where my resistance is.
It's fascinating what you say about asking questions, because I think so often we are asking ourselves questions like, why can't I do this? Why am I not good enough? Why is this not working out? But we're not asking ourselves the right questions.
And that's it's or even taking the time to answer them. We ask a lot of questions, but we don't pause for the answer.
And I often find that sometimes, instead of even asking myself questions, I will literally just go on Instagram and look for the answers there.
Look for the answer or look for the distraction. What will mean that I don't have to answer this and move the uncomfortableness away? I know. I'll look at somebody else's life.
Exactly. Which isn't going to help anything. Sometimes I'm halfway through and I'm like, what am I even, what answer? Why do I think it's going to come passively through this screen? Literally, as you say, looking at other people's lives, it's not.
Yeah, it's a massive tool for distraction. But it's also, even when it comes down to seeing the quotes or saving the quotes or being like, oh, this spoke to me. Unless you stop scrolling and come out of that app at that time and do something around that for you, then again, it's just that fleeting recognition that won't make a change.
Yeah. Let's talk quotes, because you are known for your quotes and you're known for your alter ego, Dave. So yes. who is Dave and what's he up to?
I have a day off, Dave. Dave is part of my ego. He is my inner critic. He is the part that's the voice that will kick. I like to say it's like the voiceover in Come Dine With Me. Dave is sarcastic. He is giving a running commentary all of the time. Oh, you think they liked that? Oh my God, that's brilliant. You're actually going to wear that. You're going to do what? Good luck with that. It's that constant narrative, if we're going to throw the lingo in, but the constant background noise that's going on that used to keep me quite small and holds all of my fear. So if I'm ever going to try something new or do something brave, then Dave gets scared. Dave gets scared. And then he starts to instill his fear into me to a level that used to stop me in my tracks. So when I ask Dave to have a day off, it's not always to say, go away. It's to say, do you know what? I've got this, but I need you to sit down and be quiet if I'm going to be able to get through it. And I need to recognize that's also part of my inner child that's scared, worried, thinks something bad's going to happen and needs my reassurance. Like Dave needs to be like, you're all right to have the day off. I've got this covered. You're all right. You can go and sit over there and be chill because I've got this. But it is always that part of you with the critic, and the critic isn't there necessarily to constantly give you trouble, but it is your fear amplified. And that comes usually from stories.
I love the point you raise about talking to your inner critic nicely as well.
Yeah.
Because we have all these different voices, you know, that negative inner critic voice. But then if we're also throwing negativity at that voice, is that going to be useful?
No. It's again, there are times when I've put it in quotes as quite demanding that Dave shuts up and stepping over him. But actually, Dave needs love. And it's that reassurance and talking to the way we would if there was a small child in the room worried about something. It is just reassurance that's needed. We can only handle lack and fear with love. Mm. It's the only way to make a change. And anything that we've got fear or lack around, if we pour love on it, we will find the resolution and we will find the courage.
Yeah. And so this wonderful Dave voice and you have a real no-nonsense voice on Instagram, on the stories, which I love. And I think it's so refreshing to see someone, you know, I think one of the first stories I saw of you, you were, someone had said, oh, I live with loads of housemates. And the gist was, none of them are very nice to me. And I think it was even lockdown. And I was like, interesting, what's she going to say? And because there are two ways you can be like, oh, well, they're obviously all dickheads. But you were like, might need to change your own behavior. And it's like, and you know what, maybe, you know, that could be the answer. Absolutely. So my point is, you've really cultivated, or maybe you haven't cultivated, this is the question, you have such a unique voice. How did it come about?
Oh, I think because when I started, let's be clear, I had no voice on Instagram when I started. I refused to go on to stories for at least a year. It just was not going to happen. But when I started in self-development, I was really aware that the people I connected with were people that I saw myself in. And some of the people that are woo and spiritual, and I am, felt really far removed. They were very much, you know, living in Bali, loved yoga, did things and spoke in ways that I was just like, what? What? How am I going to do that in a 9-to-5 job? How am I going to do that when I've got, you know, 6 people in the family? How am I going to do that in reality? None of it felt like it could happen unless I was on a retreat. So my voice was to make it clear that I wanted people to be able to connect that I'm like you, that I have troubles, I have worries, nothing's been plain sailing. I don't go off and live this fantasy life. I have a lot of normality, but my woo spirituality practices and my mindset practices and the way that I take responsibility for myself has changed my life. I didn't have to change my life to change my life. I didn't have to move. I didn't have to go and get a different job. I didn't have to go and change, win the lottery or do anything else. My life changed because my thoughts about my life changed. And I thought that's really important for people to understand rather than it feeling really far away. And we always try to blame everybody else. Like that story being like my housemates or my friends are being really horrible to me. And I'm like, well, look at you. How are you showing up? Because that's the only thing you've got control on. And if you don't like it and you're doing your best, then move.
Exactly. It's just like, these are the facts, mate.
Yeah. And I think that's it. Sometimes it's so simple, but we can try and make things really glossy, or we can try and make things really disparaging so nobody feels good. But actually, it's just take out some of the emotion and look at it from a different perspective. What are your options? What do you have control of? What can you do? Let's work with that. And we don't need to be judging them for having the problem or the person that's involved. And I say that a lot to a lot of clients, like, I'm not here to judge you. So there's no point editing what you're going to say, because that's not what we're here for. And if you do that, we're going to waste time.
Mm. Do you think that does result in people being like, okay, yeah, I'm going to not edit?
Yeah, I think there's a certain element of safety. And with my one-to-one clients, there's a huge element of safety that I offer by being really truthful about myself. So by making people feel comfortable, especially with shame, and sharing a shame story or anything else, to say, let's put all of our cards on the table, here's something from me, then people relax and recognize that I'm not here to be scoring you. There's no certificate at the end of this. There's nothing that gets to prove anything. So let's stop working on that narrative and let's just work on the fact that this is your life and it's important.
Mm, absolutely. And I think shame is fascinating, because shame is the one thing that it has power in silence. That's how shame takes all its power, from there being nothing around it, but then so much around it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Shame's power is keeping you quiet.
Mm.
Shame thrives and grows in the silence and in the hidden and in the, if I don't admit it, it might not have happened. And if I do admit it, what does it say about me? Rather than, yeah, that was me once upon a time. I mean, we've all got shame, all of us. And it can be in many things. There's many different, you know, there's big shame and there's little shame, but all shame holds power. Doesn't have to be enormous, but it feels enormous to you.
Yeah. And talking about it and shame, discussing the things that we're shameful about and owning them is that first step, in my opinion, to overcoming it.
Hugely. It's how you get your voice back. I do truly believe that, because when the shame is winning and you're in silence, you're uncomfortable, nothing changes, it keeps you small. When you own your shame to the degree that once you've owned it, pardon me, and admitted it to yourself, said it out loud, and you aren't afraid of it, then everything changes. It's why everybody went bonkers this year over Untamed by Glennon Doyle, because she talks so openly about owning your shame and going into it. It's why Brené Brown has such a huge following and collective. It's because we're all sat there going, oh, it's not just me.
Mm. And that is so powerful, isn't it? That feeling of, oh, it's not just me. But we can only have that if we talk about it.
Exactly. If we all sat in silence and stayed in silence, then nobody's going to have that connection, which is what shame does. It disconnects you.
What's your relationship been like with your voice? Because, you know, as you say, before, didn't really want to be even on stories. Now, very much on stories. You're talking about your, not only your business, but also your method and your vocation. Those are very personal things. Have you always been able to articulate yourself like that, or has it been a journey?
Oh, a journey. A journey for sure. I would say for the majority of my life, I did not have a voice. And any situation where I had to speak, I would lose my voice. I would find a way out of it. I would hide behind alcohol to have a volume. Otherwise, there was no volume. There was every trick in the book. And I used to have, if somebody would even contemplate asking me to speak in a work perspective, because I was always in corporate roles beforehand, it would be a bright red neck. It would be sweating. It would be shaking. It would be, I feel sick, just to speak. It wasn't even something personal, deep or anything else, a presentation on figures. But it would be something that would just stop me in my tracks.
And so what changed?
I think the way that I call it my big life blip. But whatever happened within that, when I started doing the mindset work and recognizing what I thought about myself really mattered, whether or not I was going to be on my own team really mattered. Understanding why I was saying what I was saying, what the point was, what the point of any of my communication was, that communication has to have a point. And recognizing that I was completely safe to have a voice, even if other people didn't agree with it, it didn't mean anything. Like, we can't please all of the people. And when you try to, you lose your voice because you don't know what to say. But when you're trying to please yourself, then there's a big difference. And I watched Stuart Pearce, the angel man, give a talk as well. And he was like, when we talk from our head, your voice comes from here because you're looking around the room thinking, what's he thinking about me? What do they think about what I'm saying? And it's lost. And when you drop to speak from your heart, your voice changes because you're saying this for me. And it doesn't matter how it's received. It's how I want to say it. That was really powerful. That was really powerful that I had been speaking from my head my whole life rather than just speaking from my heart. And what I do now leads to a passion where I would rather it be heard and disliked than not said. Like, I have no attachment to the way it's received. I just know that the right people that need to hear it will hear it, and the rest will just dismiss it, and that's fine.
Yeah, you have. I think you really have just described the first step to finding your voice completely. And it is that real moment of discovering, yeah, we have to speak from our heart, and we can't be pleasing everybody else in the room, because you might have to try and have one voice for one person, another voice for another person, and for another person. And we can never do that. But it's so difficult, I think, especially for women, because there are so many different pressures put on us by society of, like, you have to be there, you have to be, can't be too thin, can't be too fat, can't be too sexy, but you should be desirable. And so we're constantly like, what should I do? Who should I be? We also have so many different roles, again, in our lives, potentially put on us by society, by having to be caring, having to be someone who does this, things that we perceive that we should be doing. And it makes it so much more difficult to take that step back and just say, no, I'm going to do it for me, or I'm going to know that I have good intentions, and therefore I'm doing this one thing and this is it. Take it or leave it.
Definitely. But I think for women, the two describers I heard the most were bossy or whiny. You were one or the other. No woman ever got praised for being powerful or for having passion or for sounding anything else. We were either emotionally a wreck if we got passionate about something, or if we were really strong in our voice, we were bossy. And it came down again to that classic statement, who does she think she is? Mm. You know, why is she talking? Who does she think she is? Why is she so up herself? Why does she like herself so much? So it had really negative connotations that if you were somebody that had a voice, then you were showing off.
I have a real thing about showing off, and also like telling children, don't show off, because often actually it's someone that is being really comfortable, really happy with what they're doing. And as you say, like being passionate. And it's something we use to minimize people from such a young age.
Yeah. It's like, be quiet, sit down, don't show off. Why do you have to play up? Why are you showing me up? Mm. Or like, you're such an attention seeker.
Yeah.
All of it. But yeah, I think we do it to kids from a young age to conform. But I also think the opportunity to have a voice in our education system is quite difficult. You know, you're okay if you're standing up and saying something that's okay to be said, but everything else, even if you're loud in class or you learn in different ways, I think there's so much power in being small and being unnoticed that too many people try to get through experiences that way.
Totally. And so many women come to me and they're like, I'm just a quiet person and I want to learn how to be loud. I'm like, no, that's not who you are. And let's reframe it. It's not quiet. Are you equanimous? Are you reflective? Are you someone that observes and then gives your insight? And like, turning those, because we're always taught that as you say, like very loud is very bad and very quiet is very bad. You must be somewhere in the middle being acceptable.
Mm.
But actually, we can take power from those two extremes.
Definitely. And actually, they don't even have to be that extreme. Mm. Having something to say doesn't have to be you being dramatic or a drama queen. It can just be, I've got something worth listening to. And yeah. I'm worth listening to. How dare you come in here with all of this self-esteem? but it is. I think there is so much to be said for people that... I even said this to a client yesterday. It's like, stop being so meek because you're just trying to be liked and trying to be the kind of woman that people will be attracted to. And instead inject the sass that I know is there, that is quite fiery, that is very humorous, that has loads of courage, actually. Where is she? Why aren't you bringing her out? Why doesn't she ever communicate? And on that basis, you're just like, because less people will like her. Mm. I'm like, well, the right people will like her, and that's what matters.
Exactly. So can you pinpoint a moment where you really felt like you didn't have a voice?
32 years of my life, I would say. Yeah, I think there were so many experiences, even from personal relationships, definitely to in some jobs, where I daren't object to anything because you just toe the line. And in friendships, most definitely, there were times where it was easier to say nothing than to be difficult. All of the words we have for having boundaries, a voice, an opinion. Mm. So yeah, definitely. I think it was throughout. I very rarely, as I say, spoke, or at least spoke loudly, unless I was alcohol fueled.
Mm. And so was alcohol a really big part of finding confidence, finding that voice? And when you were there, was it an authentic voice to you, or was it someone else?
Oh, it was someone else. It was a very frustrated version of me. And actually, alcohol took all my confidence away. There's a trick of the mind that it will make you more confident. And we certainly sold that, have a bit of Dutch courage. But alcohol always took away my confidence, not just in the moment, but for days afterwards, which is eventually what led me to not drinking, giving up alcohol and finding my confidence and finding my voice.
Mm. I've never heard anyone articulate beer fear quite in that way, but that's exactly what it is.
Mm. Always, always. It would reduce all of my confidence for days, and giving up alcohol on the basis that I wanted to find out if I could be me in social settings and speak up and say what I wanted and feel comfortable with it was one of the most liberating things I ever did for myself.
I'm presuming it wasn't just, right, okay, that's it, I'm done. Was it as easy as that, or was it a bit of a journey?
I suppose a bit of a journey, because it took me a while to figure that out. It wasn't like I knew that was happening and then I got out of it. I recognised it, then I had to make peace with it, and then that was it. It's not to say I'm teetotal, I just haven't chose to pick up a drink in 2 years.
Congratulations.
Thanks. But yeah, there's a lot to be said for the fact that I'm so comfortable now to be me in all circumstances that I don't feel the pressure to drink to try to be more fun.
Yeah. And now you're here. Was there a point along the way, or even now, that you feel, right, this is what has shown me, I'm here now, I found my voice?
Ooh, I think my voice will constantly change because I do. And accepting that rather than thinking I have to be something and it will never expand, to recognizing that I'm really passionate about using my voice in a way that helps other people find theirs, which means I have less to say on a lot of other subjects and a lot to say on this subject. So my voice is channeled into this work at the moment, and it's really important to me to keep it relatable and to keep it possible, and for people to see that it's, you know, you'll only have your first time doing anything once. Your first time will always be your worst experience. and it will always get better. So just getting it out of the way, ripping the plaster off and doing it, and getting more and more people to do that, to just push ahead and try to, I was going to say expose themselves, but expose their real personality, expose their truth, expose their shame, expose the thing that's holding them back, expose themselves from the things that they're doing to stop themselves. And once that is witnessed and out loud, then I think it propels everybody to make momentum to move forwards.
Definitely. And I think it's so much more powerful. It has that real groundswell. The more people that are doing it, the more like a ripple effect, the more people then do it and so on and so forth.
Yeah. And I think when people see me own my shame, and I'll happily do it at events, in webinars and everything else, there are times when I tell people, even about my debt stories, where you can be like, wow, no one's ever said that out loud to me before. So now I feel like I'm not alone, or I feel like I'm not abnormal, or I feel like I'm nowhere near as bad as that. That's brilliant. And I think it's just the more I will serve my shame on a daily basis if it helps somebody recognize that it's not shameful, mm-hmm. and that change is possible. Yeah, there's times when, you know, I will have hurt people, times I won't have been very nice, times I would have used my voice badly, out of fear and out of lack and out of, you know, all of that. But we can change and we can learn from it, or we can stay where we are. And as long as we're going, I'm going to expand into this, I'm going to grow with this and let it carry me, then we know that we're not going to get stuck. And that means that our throat will expand with us.
Yeah, totally. And Wendy, so you are inspiring people every day, but who are the women that inspire you?
Ooh, it's tricky because the people that do inspire me have become people I've known in real life. Dolly Parton, we love Dolly. She has always defied convention. She has always been whatever she wanted to be, which I think is quite iconic. And it was at a time when women didn't necessarily, but she would take charge. She would do it her way. She would not compromise. She would say it out loud whenever people won't. And that's always been something that I've been like, yeah, go on, doll. And yeah, there's loads of people online that I've seen tell their truth. And undoubtedly, just watching them expose their truth, tell their story, get out of their own way, is just really liberating to watch. And it just makes me want to cheer them on.
Can you name a few?
Megan Rosalane. Kirsty Gallagher talks about the moon, you know, from a passionate point, and is no longer seen as odd. You know, we've got lots of people. I used to watch Becky's stories, Becky Rayburn, when she was talking about people getting lit and getting people to shine their light and step forward and do things. And I'd be like, wow, these women are incredible. You know, they are going on and sharing. Alex Light of London talks about body confidence in a way that you didn't get to see, and that she came from a editorial background. You know, she used to work for the magazines and the newspapers, and so had this completely different view that she could share with people as well. So yeah, there's many on there, but lots and lots of people that just told their truth.
And there, as you say, you know, there is so much power in groups of women sharing truth, and therefore owning shame and pushing forward and growing in power and strength.
Yeah. And I think if we're going to look at any, what catches my attention every time is the red table talks. So you've got Jada Pinkett Smith's on that table, getting different people in, talking about different subjects, and they just sit and talk in a raw way. And I sit and I watch many people that I don't know and that I do know, but you witness these conversations and you just go, whew, you know, who would have thought these people, whoever they are, with whatever they've got, being able to come in and admit these stories as well. Admit that we're all human. We're all going to be flawed. We will all sometimes shout about something that later on we don't want to shout about. We will all have been quiet about things that we wish we had shouted about. And in every instance, it's just like, what will I do next time? What will I take from this? Rather than just like kick myself, what am I going to say next? And when will I say it and how?
Amazing. Wendy, thank you so much. It has been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you very much, my lovely.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Clear Voice Podcast. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe, and send it to anyone you know who might find it useful or just enjoy it. Follow us on social media at Clear Voice Official and drop us an email, hello@clearvoiceofficial.com.